Did you miss one of Sandy Clef's shows this week? Catch it on demand. Brought to you by SCL Mortgage, the home of MySpecialMortgage.com. Go to 1043thefan.com and click the On Demand tab for all of my shows. Good evening, welcome. Yes, 9 o'clock straight up on this Friday night in the Mile High City. Sandy Clef with you, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, where there is never an off season for talking Broncos. We're honored to have Dr. Rick Perea in studio tonight. We'll get to the good doctor in just a few moments. But to bring you up to date on what is going on with the Rockies, who are the only local team playing tonight, the Nuggets, of course, open their best of seven tomorrow night against the San Antonio Spurs at Pepsi Center starting at 8:30. And they will play game two on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. The Avs are scheduled to play the Calgary Flames tomorrow night in game two of their series. The Flames won last night 4-0 and will be reacting to that game, especially during our second hour tonight. What kind of hole are the Avalanche in after game one? Does the game one loss, or how the Avalanche lost the game, disturb you the most? And your thoughts on Nuggets Spurs? We had Jeffrey Morton in last night, our basketball maven, for a Nuggets playoff roundtable, and we both end up picking, by sheer coincidence, I can assure you, the Nuggets to win the series in six games against the San Antonio Spurs. But as you'll hear in a few moments from Dr. Rick Perea, he has talked to people from both organizations within the last 24 hours, not to be named, but people with some standing within both organizations. And with the Nuggets, as we explained last night, there is a certain degree of uncertainty that prevails for any team, whether it be the Nuggets or any team in sports, really, that hasn't been in the playoffs for five full years. And now all of a sudden, with an up-and-coming team, to be sure, finds itself in the playoff picture. Denver goes in as the second seed, the expected winner, the favored team, the better team. Although during the regular season, it was a home court season series between the two teams. San Antonio won twice at home, and the Nuggets won twice against the Spurs at Pepsi Center. In fact, the Nuggets haven't beaten the Spurs. They have not met them in the playoffs, of course, so this only applies to the times they played during the regular season over the last several years, more than seven, as a matter of fact. And that's where I think some of the pressure comes going into this series. The Nuggets, as presently constituted, in Denver uniforms. Now, Paul Millsap has played with some very good teams down through the years and has won games with various teams in San Antonio. But I'm talking about Millsap in a Nuggets uniform. Talking about Will Barton in a Nuggets uniform. I'm talking about people who have playoff experience, by the way, who have played with more than one team. I'm not talking about Jokic, who's only played in Denver. Obviously, Jokic has never won in San Antonio in his time in Denver. Murray has never won in San Antonio during his time in Denver. Gary Harris has never won with the Nuggets in San Antonio during his time in Denver. You get the idea. This Nugget group playing as constituted has not won in San Antonio. Now, they haven't been in the postseason either. The Nuggets may very well be forced to win a game at some point in San Antonio. And that's why both Jeff and I were saying last night, it is important for the Nuggets to win game one. Perhaps a little less important to win game two. Because even with home court advantage, you go into a series assuming that even with home court, you might lose at home, which means you have to win one of three games in a best of seven on the other team's home court. So we'll get into that a little bit more later on. Hey, something just happened that I can't believe. I'm going to do my Jack Buck imitation from back in the day, the late, great Jack Buck. I can't believe what I just saw. Garrett Hampson tripled. The Rockies now actually have two hits in this game. One from Arenado, one from Garrett Hampson, who is on third base with two out against old friend Drew Pomeranz pitching for the San Francisco Giants. The Rockies have not scored in this series, and they still have not scored as Belt makes an over-the-shoulder catch going into short right field from his first base position to retire the side. So, through three and a half innings, it is nothing-nothing for the Rockies and Giants in San Francisco. The Rockies have two hits. The Giants have one. And because neither team scored in the first inning tonight, these two teams retain the dishonor of being the only two teams in the majors that have yet this year to score a run in the first inning. San Francisco is batting .089 through tonight in the first inning. The Rockies are batting a slightly more robust 140 in the first inning. We will talk at length with Dr. Perea in just a few moments here in studio about how much the Rockies miss Carlos Gonzalez, Parra, LeMahieu. Ottavino, it's hard to say because the Rockies are never ahead during this six-game losing streak. And by the way, the Rockies last year never lost more than five in a row. Now, the Rockies did not exactly get off to a blazing start last year either, but it would seem that way by comparison to their 3-10 record after 13 games this year. Last year, they were 6-7 in Bud Black's first year. The Rockies were 8-5 after 13 games. I'm looking up on the screen. I see the Rockies have a run. We'll have to figure that out. Stories at the plate with two out. So Hampson came across somehow? They may have called a balk. They may have called a balk. Looks that way because Story is at the plate. And he was at the plate, right? He was the one who popped to first. And before the pitch, apparently a balk was called. And that's how Garrett Hampson scored from third base. Story's still up, so it's the only way he could have scored. And there's a ground ball up the middle for a base. Maybe this is a Rocky explosion here in the fourth inning as they have a run across, the first run of the series in San Francisco, and only the Rockies' 39th run of the year as they play their 14th game. You can do the math. The Rockies at the moment are averaging less than three runs per game. Through 13 games in their history, they have never hit as poorly over the first 13 games as they have hit this year. They have never been as run-starved as they've been this year. We are never starving when Dr. Rick Perea is providing us with a veritable plate for the feast, a veritable feast of insight, observation from a sports psychologist point of view, one of the premier sports psychologists in the country. And so we will make way for Dr. Perea next on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion. even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Great Sandy Clough.
It is always a treat for us to have Dr. Rick Perea join us in studio. And tonight on this Friday, a variety of subjects at hand. I'm not sure exactly where you start, but it is an interesting time of year. Lots of convergence. We've got the NFL draft 2 weeks from yesterday. We have the hockey and basketball playoffs, to which the Avalanche and Nuggets both belong this year. The Nuggets as a number two seed. The Avalanche series with Calgary, of course, started last night. We have DU hockey playing a scintillating game last night in the national semifinals. And then maybe on the other side of things, we have the Rockies, who are off to one of their worst starts ever at 3-10. And we'll get into that a little bit because you've spent so much time around the Rockies for basically a full year.
Yes.
And now you can kind of understand maybe or have some thoughts on what has gone wrong,
sure,
why they are struggling so much. But let's get to the football part of it at this point. This is the time, and you've been involved and still are, in the draft process for many teams around the National Football League. Draft boards being assimilated, final evaluations being made. How much of a role does a psychologist such as yourself play? Or is it now strictly in the hands of the front office and the scouting staff?
That's a very good question, Sandy. You know, 80% of our work is done. You know, it starts really right after
your
the season's over.
Your work personally.
Work personally in terms of doing personality assessments.
Right.
Getting them out to our people in terms of over the internet and virtually they do them, and then we evaluate them in person. At the combine, a lot of our work is face-to-face. Then post-combine, different teams bring in their top 30, and I interview them players for an hour. That work is basically done. The work now becomes very situational. So everybody has the personality assessment. They have the mental makeup of the guys they're looking at. But now as we get closer to the draft and the teams go through their mock drafts in the war room, they will literally call me in and say, okay, if we look at this kid, we have three choices at this pick. We think this kid's going to be available. Is he a guy that we can rely on from a psychological perspective? And so I'll go back and look at the assessment, look at my notes from the face-to-face, and then give them an honest assessment of whether I give – and it's really simple, Sandy. I give them a green or a red light. Because draft day, decisions have to be made so quickly that you don't have time to sit there and analyze. That's what we're doing right now. But when we get closer to the draft and draft day, it's a green or a red light assessment from me.
No yellow lights.
No yellow lights. It's red or green because either we're taking them or we're not. There's no taking them and then making, going back on your decision. So it's a red or a green light.
So your evaluations really have to be definitive.
Absolutely.
Specific. I mean, you feel strongly one way or the other. There's no, on the one hand, he's got this, but on the other hand, he lacks that. There's very little gray area, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Correct.
In your evaluations,
yes,
from what you're saying.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I do the back and forth with me, myself. I go back and I look at what – we look at two levels of behavior. Overt, which is open. We can see it. Thoughts, feelings. But covert is what I really look at, Sandy. The things we can't see, someone's intuition, the feelings, the perceptions that they have, we can measure covert behavior. And so when I look at their covert behavior, you know, scouts, coaches, they can't see that. So I got to give them that information. And yeah, it gets to the point where I'm very definitive on who we'd take or who we wouldn't take. So it's really important that I do my homework now and do it really at a deep level, because when I give them that assessment, they're depending on it. They're making multi-million dollar decisions, not based on just my information, but my information is a spoke in the wheel. It's not the wheel, but it's a spoke in the wheel that's very important, because I can tell you this, Sandy, when players don't make it in the NFL, they grade out really well in college, they grade out really well coming out of college, The reason most players don't pan out in the NFL is because they lack the consistency and competency from the neck up. Their talent doesn't change from college to NFL. What happens is their competency and being confident on that next level when they get hit in the mouth, and they will get hit in the mouth, that has to be stable. And for most players, it's highly variable.
These interviews that get conducted now, the Broncos are in the process of doing it. I assume they're on the backside, as you suggest. That has to be pretty much done by now. And a lot of hullabaloo has been raised over the fact that the Broncos are bringing in these four top quarterbacks, some of whom may be available, some of whom may not be, when they pick at number 10. Is there any method to that madness, do you think?
Yes.
Because they don't seem to have all that much of a need or the necessity to take a quarterback, now that they have Joe Flacco, to take a quarterback with a number 10 pick. Why are they bringing in four, do you suspect?
I suspect they absolutely do need a young quarterback. I mean, Joe Flacco is somebody they hope to plug in, but he's definitely not a surefire guy. And anyway, going forward for the future, they do need some young blood at that position. But there is a methodology, Sandy. There absolutely is a methodology that rates quarterbacks from the neck up. And that's the most important part, because there's so much cerebral perceptual values that go into being a great quarterback. You know, from the neck down, they know what those players have. You know, let's go back to Paxton Lynch. I mean, physically, he had what they were looking for.
From the neck down.
From the neck down. But they didn't assess him right from the neck up. And that's the key, Sandy. So for everybody, there is a methodology. There are some teams that have a perfected methodology. There are teams that are really searching for a methodology. And there are teams that do not have a methodology.
When you bring in quarterbacks like this, is it possible that you're trying to find out, unless you have no plans to play against them, and at least one of these guys, it's very possible the Broncos will be twice a year playing against this guy. You're finding out about all four guys. Prospective opponents, not necessarily part of your team, but prospective opponents, and you're finding out about these guys. Is there any value conceivably in that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, because at some point you are going to play against these guys. At some point you're going to be game planning against these guys.
Some of them anyway, yeah. At least three of them.
Yeah, and so for that, yeah, it is very valuable. You know, coaches around the league, they understand players because they've evaluated them, you know, pre-draft at the combine. And so they do have a leg up in understanding. So when you scout and game plan for people, you have a lot of information on them.
I want to ask you about Vic Fangio, because you were around him a little bit in Chicago.
Right.
Back in 2015.
Yep.
4 years ago. I've been very impressed, at least by his public candor. He's sparse with words, but he's very much matter of fact, gets right to the point. Somebody asked him a few weeks back at the owner meeting in Phoenix about the two inside linebackers, Devin White, Devin Bush of Michigan. And without any hesitation, he says, in my opinion, they aren't nearly as far along as Roquan Smith was at this time last year. That doesn't mean the Broncos won't draft either one of those guys, but I thought that was a pretty interesting and candid assessment. From what you know and what you've seen of Vic Fangio, how involved would he be, should he be, in Denver's draft process, in your opinion, from what you've seen and heard?
I think he should be very involved because, you know, he's a true defensive guy. He understands defense.
In a defensive draft.
Yeah. And he understands, Sandy, the mentality that it takes to play defense. And that's what I want the listeners to understand. There is a mentality that it takes to play defense that's very different from offense. Can a defensive player play offense? Sure. Can an offensive player play defense? Perhaps, but it's a real attack-type mentality. You know, the greatest defensive players I've been around have a certain swag. They have a certain personality to them. I mean, it's really, we can measure that. You know, it's called conscientiousness, and conscientiousness means you cross your T and dot your I's. Oftentimes, those kind of players, the difference is personality. You know, I was fortunate to be around Lawrence Taylor a little bit when I was an undrafted free agent, and I can tell you this, The difference between Lawrence, I mean, he was physically better, but he had a mentality to him. He had a dog mentality where he just went after people, and he believed he could get to the quarterback no matter what. And so defensive guys, they got to have that mentality. And again, I think Vic clearly understands that. When I was around him in Chicago, he definitely conveyed that voice and that understood that people need to bring it from the neck up first before they deliver it from the neck down.
He loves his linebackers, doesn't
yes,
he? Is
absolutely.
That the reason? Because the linebackers exhibit more often those qualities.
Yeah, absolutely. And your linebackers are really the leaders of your defense. They call the plays. They make the checkoffs. They're very visual and vocal. And those are your leaders on the team. They set the tone. So he understands that. And I think he, better than most people they could have hired as head coach, really will capitalize on his ability to select that kind of mentality to play an attacking style of defense.
People talking about drafting best player available or need, one or the other, as if there's no overlap. What are they missing when they say it's strictly about BPA? It's strictly about need.
They're missing the situation of how the draft evolves. The draft evolves in a very interesting way. It never goes as we predict it to go. Right. So there's decisions that have to be made on the run. And so I would say, Sandy, it's as much about the people that are making those decisions, the EVPs, the general managers, the head coaches, mm-hmm. the director of player personnel and the input that they have, and being able to regulate their anxiety when it went a way they didn't perceive. Because there are times they'll have four different, you know, mock drafts. This could happen, this could happen, this could happen. Well, every single time I've seen it, something happens on draft day that they didn't anticipate. And the ones that I see that are the best, what I'm talking about, either the, you know, the head coach or director of player personnel or EVPs, executive vice presidents, the ones that can stay calm and say, okay, this didn't go like we thought, but you know what? We have these other five guys slotted in our next five. Who's the best of those guys? And they'll go right to it. They don't sit there and waste time with thinking about what they're thinking about in terms of anxiety. So people, their anxiety affects draft day selections as well, Sandy. I want people to understand that too. It's not just the players that have to regulate anxiety on the field. The front office has to regulate anxiety on draft day as well.
We'll come back. We'll talk about what's right with the Nuggets and perhaps what's wrong with the Rockies next with Dr. Rick Perea in studio from Think One on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
It's the great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Back in studio with Dr. Rick Perea, we've got Think One. You're in town on a fairly regular basis now.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about Think One and what it's all about. And you went by a different name previously. Does the name change reflect any change or broadening maybe in what you're doing at Think One?
It does. We used to be called DK2 Motivation and Performance. Now we're called Think One, the Behavior Design Specialist. You know, more and more in psychology, we're talking about how we can design people's behavior, design their thoughts, design their perceptions. And we really can, Sandy. It's really come to become an art. You know, whether it's a pro football player or a CEO or a high school soccer player, people have to get their head right and design their thoughts so their body will follow. So we do that there. We have a cool facility. We have sensory deprivation tanks. We have biomats. We train people's brains through computer programs, which is neurofeedback. So we do a lot of different things. We're off I-25 and Arapahoe Road, and we'd love to see people come out.
ThinkOneForYou.org.
Correct.
Is the website. So if
yep.
people want more information, that's where you would send them. And your email is drp@thinkoneforyou.org. And we'll repeat those pieces of information as we go along here. But I wanted to ask you about two teams in the city that seem to be headed in opposite directions. The Nuggets to the playoffs starting tomorrow night against San Antonio as the number two seed, and how everything seemed to fall their way down the stretch. Even things they couldn't control themselves seemed to fall their way. And about the Rockies, who are off to one of their worst starts at 3-10, pending the result of tonight's game in San Francisco, and everything they touch seems to turn to mold.
Yeah, or coal.
Why is that? Now, the baseball season and the basketball season are a bit different.
Right.
The baseball season is almost twice as long. Is there anything you can tell us about an organization that had the highest of hopes for this year? They had some national figures picking them, perhaps to go as far as the World Series. Why have things been so sour so far, in your opinion?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to preface this by saying this is definitely my opinion. I feel, Sandy, that the Rockies in general may have undervalued the importance of team chemistry. And what I mean by is when you look at Cargo, you know, I was with the Rockies in 16 and for a full season, and I was in that clubhouse and I was around Cargo, and Cargo and I became very close, and we still are to this day. He was a guy in the clubhouse that helped everybody feel calm. You know, before everybody's going out, and even the starting pitcher who's tight as a drum every time, whoever it is, Cargo would always be cracking jokes, laughing, having fun. I mean, you can hear him and people like Vinny Castilla and Parra and those guys just laughing, having fun, keeping the clubhouse loose. Sandy, we study this in psychology. We study that, team chemistry. There's team task cohesion, means people do their job, but social cohesion, that's where teams, the players love each other. They play together. They play for each other. So, you know, it's easy for me to have 20-20 now, but I will tell you this. I think when you look at, they don't have Parra anymore. They don't have Cargo anymore. Those are two chemistry guys, real chemistry guys. And I don't even mean on the field. I mean in the clubhouse before you go on the field.
Oh, especially in the clubhouse.
Which is very important. Which is very important. And then you look at losing DJ, LeMahieu. You know, DJ's quiet, but he's solid. He's great friends with Blackman. That was a solid, cohesive unit. Those two guys were great friends. He's gone. Then you look at Blackman. He's not quite playing to where he was. Is that part and parcel of maybe him missing his best buddy? Now, people who are listening out there might say, oh, come on. You know, these are men. No, but you know what? They have emotions. They have feelings. They're human beings. And I want people to understand that how people feel will largely dictate how they play. And I think the Rockies may have undervalued the team chemistry aspect when they decided to trade some of those players away.
The pushback, and again, this comes outside your sphere of influence, is that, hey, you can't pay everybody. And they've already extended Arenado, as you well know. Germán Márquez, who, in spite of his outing the other night, seems to be their star of the future on the pitching staff. They still have Trevor Story to extend at some point. They still have Kyle Freeland, the left-hander who has been so magnificent for them over the last year plus. I know that's not your sphere, but again, what you're talking about is stuff that happens off the field, stuff that can make a losing streak, such as the one they're in right now. I think they've lost six in a row, more bearable, easier yes. to get out of.
Yes, absolutely. You know, Sandy, when you get into these losing streaks, players will look to their leaders. They will look to the people who are leaders in the clubhouse, out on the field for answers. And, you know, sometimes it's just a calming voice. You know, Sandy, I think back to, you know, all my training, all my experience, you know, I have a PhD and all this. But, you know, I always revert back to something my mom told me a long time ago. And she said, it's all going to work out, son. It's all going to work out. Cargo had that kind of calming mentality over the team. If we got in a 6-game skid, he was one of the guys walking around. I mean, he'd literally walk around the clubhouse and say, bro, it's going to be all right, man. We're going to get through this. We've been through this before. Let's stay together. He was that kind of guy. And so I really emphasize, again, that team chemistry is huge. Everybody in the majors can play. Everybody in the NFL can play. Everybody in the NBA can play. The difference is the teams that win the championship, Sandy, and I'll, you know, not patting myself on the back, but I've been part of some championships, college football national championships. I've been around Super Bowl champions. All those teams that we're talking about that win, they have that cohesive unit, that social cohesion. So I would say that, again, I think we can point a finger at that's probably a part of what's going with the Rockies. I'm not saying that's 100%, but that's a piece of what they're missing right now.
The Nuggets on the court seem to be struggling just a little bit, although they achieved what they had in mind months ago, more than perhaps they could even have dreamed at the start of the season, 5 years out of the playoffs, and now all of a sudden they're the second seed. All pretty good on the surface, but behind the scenes now, what do you think happens to a Jokic or a Murray once the playoffs begin? Playoffs they've never participated in over their years in the NBA so far, although I will say at least in Jamal Murray's case, at Kentucky, he played in a lot of big games.
Yeah, you bet.
So he knows what a big game environment is like. He knows what single elimination is like. He's played in the national college tournament.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you ask that, Sandy, because I talked to a representative from the Nuggets yesterday, and their viewpoint was, you know, we're going into uncharted territory. We're going as a high seed. Yeah. And his position was, I hope we really respond well. That's what he said, okay?
I hope.
Yeah. I also talked to a member from the San Antonio Spurs yesterday.
Yes.
A member. And that person said, and I quote, "We're coming to Denver to take care of business." Now, whether that happens or not, I'm not sure. But that is the difference in the mentality. This person calls me yesterday from San Antonio.
Yes.
He was calling me to see if I wanted some tickets to the game. But he also said, hey, we're coming to Denver to take care of business. And then the Nuggets representative was, I hope we respond well to this stage.
You hear from a San Antonio person, and I don't know obviously who it is, but that's a person talking whose team has been in the playoffs 22 years in a row.
Right.
And the Nugget person is a person talking whose team under his supervision, so to speak, perhaps has not been in the playoffs at all since he got there. So they don't know. Nobody knows for sure. But again, you're around this team and you're around Jokic.
Yep.
And I'm wondering what you've seen in him this year that represents growth. Not in terms of numbers. We know the numbers are great.
Sure.
What have you seen from him or maybe not seen from him that might be a tell going into the playoffs as to how he will respond? Because the reputation he has is he'll kill you unless you rough him up and get him complaining to the officials and all that. Throw him off his game that way.
Yeah. You know, if you let him play what we call on the parasympathetic side, where he's calm, having fun, relaxed, when he's on the parasympathetic side of his autonomic nervous system, he's a great player. When he's on the sympathetic side, meaning his heart rate's up, respiration, muscle tension, narrowing of thinking, and that's where you can get his feathers ruffled. That's where, and San Antonio knows this, I'm not putting something out there and nobody knows. If you ruffle him a little bit, he responds to that, and he does get on that sympathetic side. So he has grown a tremendous amount. When he's out there playing the game and he's free and he's on that parasympathetic and he's calm and he's relaxed, he's got a beautiful game. He's very athletically unathletic, if you will. Okay?
And he's tough to guard for that reason because he's so awkward.
Exactly. But at the same time, when he gets tight, gets on that sympathetic side, you know, the muscle tension sets in, narrowing of thinking. He's not the same player. He doesn't see the floor the same way that he does. So I think San Antonio has that in their strategy to understand how to get in the heads of some of these young players, again, because the Nuggets haven't been here, Sandy, and it's even coming from the top down.
All right, we'll talk more with Dr. Rick Perea. Lots to cover still as the good doctor joins us in studio on this Friday night. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
It's the great Sandy Clough on Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
Continuing now with Dr. Rick Perea in studio, it's Think One, the behavior design specialist. Dr. Rick Perea is the outstanding organization and performance psychologist who's worked with multiple collegiate and major professional teams through the years, and it's thinkoneforyou.org. That's the website. You can email Rick, Dr. P, at thinkoneforyou.org. And I want to ask you about something that Nick Saban said the other day. And whatever you think of Nick Saban, I thought it was a fairly insightful statement that he made. He was talking about his own kids who leave for the pros And they aren't first-round picks or second-round picks. They're fourth-round picks, fifth-round picks, sixth-round picks. And he basically said they don't understand the value of perhaps staying that one more year and themselves becoming, by staying one more year, first-round picks, second-round picks, instead of fourth, fifth, sixth, third-day picks. I'm sure you're aware somewhat of the statement he made.
Sure.
You've been around Saban a ton. Do you think his point was well taken?
I do. I think that, you know, he needed to say that because there were too many players that were making that type of a decision that were really influencing not only their career, maybe coming out a little bit too early in terms of understanding footwork and technique
sure.
as a player on the field, but it's also impacting their financial future, too. You know, it sets up how their first 3 years are set up in the league in terms of finance and compensation. But I think the other big thing he was trying to get at, Sandy, is that you develop one more year emotionally and psychologically, too. You know, one of the great things I think that Coach Saban does is he still, when he goes out and recruits, he talks about the experience of being a college football player, the experience of being a college student athlete, coming to a great university, playing in a great disciplined program where you're expected to go to class, where you're expected to be on time, where you're expected to be disciplined, and how that's going to help you for the future. You know, there's not enough coaches that talk about that anymore, that talk about the experience you're going to get as a young man at a four-year university playing Division I college football. It's a tremendous experience. And that leads into, you know, when I hear these people talk about athletes getting paid, I'm like, they're getting paid. You're getting your tuition's paid. But how do you put a price tag, Sandy, on 4 years of tremendous experience of being taken basically from an old adolescent into a young man who understands how to be on time, who understands structure, and understands discipline? How do you put a price tag on that? And I think that's what Coach Saban was really getting at, is stay here, develop yourself not only physically, but emotionally and psychologically.
I'm hearing, again, I haven't been inside their locker room or their meeting rooms. Vic Fangio strikes me as a guy who will have his players in meeting rooms an awful lot. He won't necessarily be killing them on the practice field.
Right.
And you're limited in training camp anyway. They start July 15th. And ordinarily, with a new coach, you'd be a little hesitant. They're playing in the Hall of Fame game. That's why they're starting right. early this year. And, of course, with a first-year head coach, they get the two-week start on off-season activities. I don't think he's going to abuse that. I don't think he's going to have them on the field necessarily
no.
a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be in meeting rooms with them and doing a lot of his teaching in meeting rooms. And actually, I think he will project what Vance Joseph didn't always project. And that's a feeling of calm and certainty and authority.
Yeah, well, definitely.
In the meeting rooms as much as on the field.
Yeah, you know, one of the things about Vic is his nonverbal communication is very stable and it's very calm. You know, I love Vance Joseph. I was with him in Miami a few years ago. I love him as a person. But one of the things when you watched him on the Broncos sidelines, his nonverbal communication gave off the message that he was a little bit anxious. That
frantic,
sure.
almost.
Yeah, almost at times, yeah. And so I think Vic's the opposite. He's a calming figure not only verbally but nonverbally as well. Because players look to coaches. When bullets are flying, players will look at coaches to see how they're reacting. So I think he brings that. And you're right, Sandy. He's going to have them learning in the classroom, not necessarily beating them up on the field. And that's one of the great things I've learned from observing the great coaches. It's not more repetitions on the field. It's getting yourself right mentally, getting yourself prepared scheme-wise from the neck up so that when you step on the field, you can go full speed.
Derek Wolfe came out the other day and was so positive about the new environment, the new head coach. He was asked about Chris Harris, and he said, I understand exactly where he's coming from. He should get its money. He should get his money, and it's time for the Broncos to pay Chris Harris. What about, again, from a team psychological point of view? They look at Harris. A lot of the veterans, remember, Aqib Talib got traded away for almost nothing. T.J. Ward got released. And now they see Chris Harris seemingly fighting over a new contract when the Broncos went out in free agency and spent more at least on an annual basis, on Kareem Jackson, who's older than Chris Harris and not nearly as good a player, and spent $32 million guaranteed dollars on Juwan James, who is a totally unproven, when it comes to week-in, week-out reliability player, whereas Chris Harris is proven.
Right. They need Chris Harris. They absolutely need Chris Harris. As much for his ability on the field as his leadership off the field. Chris is great at holding people accountable, and it's not always overt, like you can see it. You know, he does it by example. He does it by his play. But then when he speaks, people listen. And Chris is a tremendous example of what we were talking about with the Rockies and how they may have undervalued that chemistry part. You know, Chris is so good physically on the field that you forget about what he brings in terms of the connection, the glue of that defense. He is glue, Sandy. He's part of the glue that won the Super Bowl a few years ago. They need Chris Harris. I hope they value him because it's easy to lose that when he's so good physically. But he's the total package, and he, as much as anyone on that defense, will hold them together.
And when Vic Fangio has talked about this defense, he has named four people specifically. Vaughn Miller, Bradley Chubb, Justin Simmons, and, of course, Chris Harris. By name.
Yes.
He hasn't named specifically anybody else.
Yep.
That doesn't mean he doesn't think anybody else can play. But he knows what the core of his defense represents.
Yeah.
And Chris Harris is part of that core.
Well, and, you know, the fact that Chris is an undrafted free agent is such a feather in his cap. He wears that feather proud. Yeah. He doesn't talk about it, but he plays with that chip
absolutely
on his shoulder. And
all
people
the time
see it, they feel it, and they reverberate off it. I mean, they really glue to him in a passive way. I know for me, as somebody watching him out on the practice field, he was fun to be around. And that, Sandy, builds that social cohesion we were talking about that the Rockies may be missing right now.
Dr. Perea, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Sandy. Always a pleasure being here. Love you, brother.
There he goes. Dr. Rick Perea, hour number two just ahead on this Friday night in the Mile High City, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.